Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on understanding limited liability right after this. When people call the law school and ask how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air, keep in mind that most of the topics that you hear on the radio I teach in detail in one of my classes here at the law school. For example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was Alfred the Great who codified the common law back in 872 AD into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 were incorporated into our federal constitution and our Bill of Rights. The common law was taken from the Mosaic law, which was given to Moses at Mount Sinai and recorded in Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24, verse 8. And it includes negligence, insurance, and taxes, such as income tax, property tax, and social security taxes. These IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of the tithing laws of Scripture, and they work a theft on everyone that participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and Social Security, and that's the basis of my tax and status school. We owe this income tax and Social Security tax because we've contracted into it. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write for our free general law CD package. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. That's the place to start. Just call and ask for it. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website and send us an email. That's georgegordon.org. You can just click on to the email machine, but here's a better way. You can click on to our archives page, and that archives page, you can download it right there. So it's georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page and download it right there is probably the best way to do that. All right, we're talking about limited liability. Now, limited liability is insurance, pure and simple. No big mystery about it. And I got to tell you a little story over here about limited liability. I was driving down the road one day many years ago now from St. Louis. I was coming home, and as I was driving down the road, pretty soon I looked in the rearview mirror, and there's Ranger Rick right behind me. And pretty soon he turned on his lights, and we stopped, and he came over, and he said, "Now, it looks like to me that your license plate is expired." Well, it is true, it was expired, but not quite. See, you get 30 days to renew it, and this was the 30th day. So I still had till midnight. He was jumping the gun there a little bit, but he wanted to know about my insurance and license and registration, one thing and another. And pretty soon he was dissatisfied, and so he arrested me and hauled me off to the Crawford County Jail. Now, I spent a little time in the Crawford County Jail, and one day, when this case finally came to trial, they were real concerned about auto insurance. So we'll zero in on this auto insurance portion of the case, because that's where the government here is actively trying to promote insurance. In fact, in 1976, the state of Missouri enacted a law that they called the Financial Responsibility Act of 1976. It was the precursor to the Obama health care bill, in which government wrote a clause into the bill and said, we compel everybody to buy this product. Now, you just think about that for a minute, because if the government can compel you to buy insurance, how come they can't compel you to open a bank account, take out a credit card, buy carpet, buy a big screen TV? I mean, is there any limit to what government could compel you to do, compel you to buy? I mean, you know, this health insurance, you know, costs money, takes money out of your pocket. And they've come along and said, okay, if you don't buy this health insurance, we're going to fine you and jail you. Now, how does the government get the power to compel you to buy this product from this private corporation, this private company called insurance? I would submit to you that if government can compel you to buy insurance, they can sure compel you to buy an automobile. You know, in the name of the health, safety, and welfare of the public, every American must show proof of ownership of an automobile, and if you don't do that, we'll fine you $500 or throw you in jail for 6 months. Well, it's done by your consent. It's done by your consent. And once you've given your power of attorney to somebody, there just isn't any limit to how far this can go. Now, if I came to you and said, sign a contract with me and give me the power to compel you to buy insurance, automobiles, big screen TVs, or something else under penalty of jail, you know, you'd probably say, Gordon, you got to be nuts. I'd never give anybody that kind of power, much less you. And I would say to you, I'm a pretty nice guy, easy to get along with, friendly, outgoing. And I probably wouldn't compel you to buy too much that you don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and probably don't want. But you're saying, well, I wouldn't give you that power. Well, then why would you give that to Barack Obama or Blue Cross Blue Shield or to some nameless, faceless bureaucrat who lives in Washington, D.C. or Bethesda, Maryland? Now, you have already done that, past tense. And remember, that's a guardian ward relationship. Your president is your guardian. The Congress is your guardian. And they're simply acting in your behalf. You registered voters out there all have a guardian. See, you've declared yourself to be politically incompetent and unable to manage your political affairs. And so you have elected, appointed a political guardian to go to Washington, D.C. and make law for you. And they did. Now the rest of you are sitting there saying, yeah, but I'm not registered to vote and I didn't vote for that guy. Well, wait a minute. You're a citizen of the United States, and you come under the citizenship provisions of Title VIII. You're already in the game. You've already consented. Your birth certificate did it for you. Citizenship. Now, unless you've expatriated your citizenship, resigned your Social Security number, and withdrawn yourself from the regulated enterprise, well, then you're a part of it. Or at least we presume you are until you plead out of it. Now, it may be that you might make a successful pleading, you know, if you were to go into litigation. They're going to charge you with failure to purchase health insurance, and then you're going to go to trial. Now, can you plead out of that? If you can, I guess you'd be all right. I don't know how you're going to plead out of it with a Social Security number, but then that's another story for another day. Different people play chess in different ways. Well, anyway, we went to trial, and the prosecution came in, and they said, this guy, George Gordon, was operating a motor vehicle in the state of Missouri, and he did not have auto insurance. Policeman testified to that. Prosecution testified to that. Well, then they rested their case, and pretty soon it was my turn. So I got up on the witness stand, and I laid some preliminary foundation, and I said, now, I'm not a citizen of the United States, and I'm a citizen of the Kingdom of Israel. And I went on to explain that I I used to be a citizen, but I expatriated my citizenship under Title 8, Section 1481, and that it is true that I was operating the motor vehicle, and it is true that I didn't have insurance under the Financial Responsibility Act of 1976, but that it's against the law for me, a Hebrew, to have insurance because under the First Amendment, I'm practicing a truly and sincerely held religious belief based upon a duty that I have to God, which is individually held, truly and sincerely held as an individual, and that I have to perform this, and we do it as a matter of law. It's what we call a legal defense as opposed to a factual defense. Factually, I'm guilty as hell, but legally, I don't have any obligation here. Remember, a crime requires two elements, an act with intent. Well, they've got the omission, which is the equivalent of an act. But they don't have any bad intent. See, I didn't walk in there and say, I don't have to participate in this, you commie pinko fags. No, the legislature was acting in behalf of the health, safety, and welfare of the public. At least that's what they told you. The truth is they're acting in behalf of the insurance industry to generate business for them. The insurance industry is a very profitable enterprise for government and insurance. But they can't come to you and tell you, well, we're doing this so that we can line the pockets of the insurance industry at your expense. So sit down and shut up. They don't want to do that because, see, then you'd get mad and you wouldn't vote them back into office. So they come to you and say, we're doing this in case somebody runs into you. We want to make sure that they can pay you for the damages that they cause. And that made you feel real good because they appealed to your greed. I want them to pay me. As if the common law couldn't make these people pay. Well, there's a modality for that. Let me just describe it for you. Under the common law, which was brought down to us from Mount Sinai, you know, by Moses, if I were to run into your car and cause you a damage, then if I couldn't pay that damage, what you would do is you'd bore a hole through my ear, sell me to the aggrieved party, to the year of release or the jubilee, whichever was required, to pay the debt. And if you didn't want me, you could take me over to the auction block and sell me. Now, the 13th Amendment's a collateral estoppel to slavery and bond servitude. You know, God made a mistake when he prescribed bond servitude and slavery into the common law. And so we adopted the Roman civil law, and we corrected that with the 13th Amendment. We fixed God's mistake. We can all be real proud of that. So now, without the bondservant slavery statute, now we have replaced that with insurance. It's a kinder, gentler way. As George Bush would say, it's kinder and gentler. So the judge couldn't contain himself, so it was Judge Light. He was an old fellow, double or triple dipper, and he said to me, well, Mr. Gordon, let's suppose for the sake of our argument here that you had an accident. How would you pay the damages? And so I reached in my pocket, pulled out a Kruger, and this is before 1986, and dropped it on the counter in front of the microphone to dramatize my point. And I said, I would pay it with gold coin, Your Honor. The judge now comes back and says, but Mr. Gordon, what if you didn't have enough gold coin to pay for all the damages? And I said, well, then, Judge, you'd take me over to the doorpost, or the bailiff here would take me to the doorpost, bore a hole through my ear, and sell me to the aggrieved party. Now, I want you to notice here that there's no aggrieved party here in the courtroom. The state is acting on behalf of a contract that they presuppose that they have with me and that I'm in breach of contract. I just walked in and said, hey, wait a minute. I don't have a contract with you. I'm not a citizen, not a resident. And I'm practicing the strict liability statute required by Exodus 21:28, which is what Public Law 97-280 prescribes. It's what the First Amendment prescribes, and it's what Seeger versus U.S. prescribes, and it's what President Reagan signed into law in Public Law 97-280, and he prescribed. So it's what God requires, the Supreme Court requires, the Constitution requires, the Congress requires, and the President requires. And the only guy that's bitching about my conduct here is this prosecutor over here, the state of Missouri. They're the only ones that are complaining. And that's because they want everybody to be compelled into this regulated enterprise, this guardian ward relationship in which everybody has insurance. And I don't blame them. It's a hell of a profitable business. It's good for government. It's good for the insurance industry. But it never was good for me. And I'm not sure that it's good for you or anybody else. Now, the judge, no dummy. I mean, this judge, now he's an old-timer. Hell, he must have been 80 years old. Looked like he was 80. Of course, he might have been 39, just living a hard life, but he looked like he'd been around the block six times. And he said to me, wait a minute. The 13th Amendment prohibits involuntary servitude. And it does. You see, you can't go out here and bring somebody into bond servitude against his will and over his objection. But now remember, how did they get you involved in insurance? Well, by your consent. How did they get you involved in Social Security and income tax? By your consent. So I said to the judge, well, I agree. The 13th Amendment is a collateral estoppel to involuntary servitude. But the 13th Amendment is not a bar to voluntary servitude, and I just volunteered. You see, you can't have it both ways. Now, you're either going to have limited liability. Now, think about this. Remember yesterday we talked about the buckboard story? Now, if I have an accident and I cause you a damage, I have to pay every damn dime of that. Every dime. And you might take my farm, you might take all my cattle, all my money, everything I've got. It's a risk that I run. That's what strict liability is all about. I take the risk. But I'm not paying the premium. And I'm not submitting to a guardian ward relationship. I have all of my freedoms, all of my capacities that I was born with, all of my inalienable rights are intact. Under Hale versus Hinkle, you know, I'm an individual and I owe nothing to the public so long as I do not trespass upon their rights. Okay, now that's what I wanted and that's what I've got. Now, on the other hand, if I cause somebody a damage, I got to pay for it. In other words, if I drive through the school zone and I run over a kid, I have to buy every kid I killed. I got to pay for them. You don't. Isn't that wonderful? See, you've got limited liability. You can drive through the school zone, kill two kids, and you don't have to pay for either one of them. The insurance company has to pay for them. And that's why the insurance company sends their lobbyists over to the legislature and has them enact laws like speed limits through school zones, seatbelt laws, and all these myriad rules and regulations. You've got 2,000 laws just in your traffic code in your state. 2,000 laws. And they do that to protect the claims window of the insurance industry. See, they want to sell you insurance. And they want you to pay the premiums, but they don't want to pay any claims. And they're going to do everything they can to limit your claim on the claims window. So when you get this health care insurance, okay, then they're going to turn around and see if there's any way that we can collect your premium without paying you any benefits. That's the name of the game. So it works. If we have to pay, well, then we'll pay. If you're looking at auto insurance, let me show you how the insurance companies work this scam. They got the legislatures to enact legislation that requires all of us to buy auto insurance under the guise that if everybody buys auto insurance, then everybody's financially responsible. First problem that we have is that 54% of Americans carry no insurance. So only 46% of us are insured coming out of the chute. That's number one. I know the law requires that you buy insurance. I'm just telling you that more than half the people of the country don't do it. That isn't fair. That isn't right. I agree. But that's the way it's done. Illegal aliens aren't supposed to come into the United States because they don't have papers, but they do it anyway. That's life. That's the way it is. Wake up and smell the coffee. Now, when you have an accident, let's presume that you have an accident with another insured driver. And if you do, and the claim is $5,000 or less, the insurance company will pay like a slot machine. If the damage is $5,000 to $50,000, they won't pay and you'll have to litigate. If the damage is $50,000 to $100,000 or $100,000 or more, the insurance company, on average, will pay 11% of the damages claimed. 11%. Now, if you have an accident with me, I have to pay you 100%. Insurance companies only pay 11% on average. Now, does it solve that social problem that we have from people that are driving without insurance? The answer is absolutely not. It does not solve that problem. It lines the insurance company's pockets with money, which in turn lines the government's pockets with money. See, government taxes the insurance company, and the insurance company passes the tax on to you. The insurance company is the corporation which acts as the intermediary between you and the government. If the government taxed you, you'd get mad and vote them out of office. But if the government taxes the insurance company and the insurance company passes it on to you in the form of an insurance premium, you'll love it. That's the way we want to do business. And that's the way we do it. Now, that being the case, I would suggest to you that you might be better off, since you're only going to collect 11% of that $100,000 claim, that you concentrate on saving your premiums and putting them in your own can. That's called self-insurance. And we'll talk about that a little later on when we get to that point in the story. But the moral to the story is that it creates a guardian ward relationship in which you have to pay the premiums. The insurance company doesn't have to pay the claim. Well, sometimes they do have to pay the claim. That happens once in a while. It's kind of like winning in the slot machine and the house has to pay you. But they don't pay very often. And they make a big scene out of it when they do pay. That's to make sure that everybody sees, hey, this insurance really works. Look at how the insurance company paid off, and that encourages everybody to want to play in the game because, you know, when there's a winner, it makes everybody feel good. Now, in the lottery, the odds are 84 million to one against you. And as a result of that, there are people that make a lot of money, but there are 84 million people that didn't make anything. Now, in the insurance program, it's better than 84 million to one. It's only 200 to one. 200 to 1. You pay $200 in, they pay you one back. And that's a hell of a lot better than 84 million in and 1 million back, or $1 back. That's a 84 million to 1 is the odds at the lottery window, and 200 to 1 is the odds here with the insurance industry. So the insurance industry is a much better deal than the lottery. But it still isn't good at 200 to 1. I think you would be better served if you concentrated on self-insurance and get paid 1 to 1. 1 to 1. Is there some risk? Yeah, there is. Let me show you in auto insurance what the risk is. Get your pen and paper out here, and I'll just tell you right off the top of my head. I'm an old-timey insurance adjuster, so let me tell you how this thing works. And I learned this back in 1965. I was surprised at the time when this came down. But here's what we learned in insurance adjusting school. The auto insurance industry in 1965, when I was in the business, was collecting $100 in premiums, and they were paying out 5%. Over the years, the auto insurance industry has cried, and they've become real sad, and they said, oh my God, our costs have more than doubled, and they're not lying to you. They have. the auto insurance, the claims window of the auto insurance has in fact more than doubled. They now pay out $11 per hundred, 11%. Name a business that takes in a dollar and then nets 89 cents, has 11 cents for cost of goods sold. Well, banking is one. Pharmaceuticals is two. Government is three. I mean, there are businesses out there, but insurance is right up there in the top 400, boys and girls. Your business isn't doing that. I'll just bet you you're not doing that. Insurance does. Now, that's the auto insurance. I can't tell you firsthand from fire, flood, and the rest. I'm not experienced at that. Didn't deal with that. I dealt with automobiles. But I can assure you this. You can rest assured that fire, flood, derivatives, homeowners, life, health, accident, they're all about the same. They're making money. The insurance company is not business out there losing their shirt. Rest assured. And they make their money in a guardian ward relationship with you, in which you sign up. And when you sign up, then they have the power of guardian ward, and they can do that. Government has your guardian ward power through the police power, and they force you to go over to the insurance company and buy their product. Well, isn't that just real special? Then the bank gets in on the act, too. See, the bank, and when you take out a mortgage, they require that you buy insurance. Yeah, fire insurance and homeowner's insurance on your house, and then if you don't, they'll foreclose on your mortgage or crazy hell with you. Now, that's how that game is played. Now, in the case here with Judge Like, he went a step further, and the prosecutor and Judge Like moved to null pros, which in this state means move to dismiss. They did that in the interest of justice. They did that because if you convict me and cause me a damage, see, I haven't been damaged, I'm just here in trial. But if you fine me $5 or $50 or $100 and cause me a damage, I'm going to take this up on appeal. I'm going to take this up to the U.S. Supreme Court like Rosa Parks, and I'm going to ask this question of the Supreme Court. Can you compel me into this regulated enterprise when I'm not even a citizen of the United States practicing, and I'm practicing the Mosaic Law under the First Amendment pursuant to Public Law 97-280 under Seeger versus U.S. and Hale versus Hinkle, Wickard versus Filburn, Ashwander versus TVA? Can you do that to me? And you know, they didn't want to find out. They didn't want to know the answer to that. So they said, let's let this black guy ride the front of the bus. Then we don't have to face reality on this. Kind of like Charlie Brown and John Jacobs, you know, said, hey, we don't want to go there. We don't want to find out. Now, that does not set any case precedent for you. It doesn't get me written up in the law books, you know, like Miranda versus Arizona. But it sends us a pretty strong indication. This judge and prosecutor agreed with me that my legal position was pretty good. It was good enough that they didn't want to find out what the appeals court was going to tell them. Just like Charlie Brown and John Jacobs and Judge Holstein, you know, when they all got together, and the case was remanded by Justice Thomas of the Supreme Court back to further proceedings there in Taney County. They said, hey, no, not Taney County. It was over in West Plains, Howell County. And they said, hey, we don't want to find out. We don't need to know. We'll stonewall that. All right, now, the reason that I point that out is that there is a reason for limited liability, and there's a reason for strict liability. So when God, our Creator, gave us strict liability, he wasn't whistling Dixie through a straw hat. He had this thing scoped out, and he said to himself, if you want to have the perfect law of liberty, and that's what the Ten Commandment law is called. It's called in the New Testament the perfect law of liberty. If you want to have liberty with the fewest number of people acting as your guardians, telling you what to do, when to come in, when to go out, and what to do in between, then you have to be responsible for your actions. You can't have somebody else responsible for your actions, like Social Security. See, they're responsible for providing for your old age, unemployment, broken bones on the job. Not you. But by the same token, they're going to regulate and control you. You people that are on welfare and food stamps, hey, wait a minute, that's a guardian ward relationship in which your guardian can tell you what kind of food you can buy. For instance, we're going to provide you with certain things, but we won't provide you with alcohol, tobacco, firearms. The food that you buy is subject to social lady coming in, opening your cupboards, and looking in to see whether or not we approve of the cornflakes that you're buying and feeding your kids. If you want that kind of regulation, if you want that kind of intervention, if you can't govern yourself and you need a guardian, believe me, the government will furnish one. Whether it's a highway patrolman or social lady or it's a welfare lady, they'll be right in there to regulate you and to protect you from yourself. If that's what you need, you can get it. Government is the agency that provides it. Now, if you want freedom, you want liberty, you want self-determination, I want to lead my own life with no or very little government intervention, then you want to have no or very little in the way of contracts with your government. Hang on, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and download it right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour, the Editorial Review, then please go to our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about understanding limited liability. And limited liability is a guardian ward relationship. I showed you that last time as we looked at the guardian ward relationship in the legal encyclopedia. Now, that's a liability that we voluntarily take on to ourselves. Nobody is enforcing this upon you. It has been done by your voluntary consent. It's your failure to object timely. Now, if you find yourself in the program and that you've been defrauded, well, then you need to get out. You need to raise the issue of fraud. You need to litigate and get an adjudication and a dismissal. If, on the other hand, you like the system, and, you know, most people do. When I'm out here talking on the road, a lot of times people say, you know, you're some kind of a nut. Why in the world would anybody want to give up his Social Security, his driver's license, his job, and everything that he's been working for and knows and loves and has sacrificed for? You know, you got a good point there, partner. Shucks, I'm not trying to get you people to change. It has never been my intention. It has never been the intention of anybody here at the law school to persuade you people to give up your citizenship, driver's license, birth certificate, or to expatriate, or to stop paying your taxes, Social Security, or anything else. It's our intention to show you that there's another side to the coin. Every coin has two sides. There's an up and there's a down. There's a left and there's a right. There's a heads and there's a tail. And I think that you should be informed of the benefits and liabilities of the other side. So I told you what it was. I showed you. Limited liability demands full responsibility on your part. Most people do not want to be responsible. Well, okay. If you don't want to be responsible for your actions, well, then you have to have a guardian who will be responsible. Now, I suppose you're saying, I don't want a guardian and I don't want to be responsible. That's anarchy. You can't have it both ways. Tax protesters want all the benefits from Social Security and the government, but they don't want to pay for it. I don't think you can do that. Those of us that don't want any benefits from government, and we don't want to pay for it, then we have to be fully responsible. We got to take care of ourselves. No safety net. I was talking to a guy one time out in Utah, and he was telling me a story out there about a guy that had five wives. And I think, if I remember right, these five wives had 30-some children, and all of them were on welfare. All of the children are on welfare. This guy's on welfare. All these wives are on welfare. He goes around, I guess, once a week and services one woman. If you could do that much. I don't know if you could service five women once a week, but, you know, that's neither here nor there, I guess. But anyway, that's what he was doing or trying to do, and the government came down on him. And they prosecuted him for polygamy and just got right after him. You know, nobody cares if you've got five wives. I'll tell you a little story over here. I ran across a guy one time. He had five wives, and he had the money to support them, and the government wasn't bothering him. He had 15 sons. Now, I presume that this guy with five wives and 15 sons probably had a few daughters. I know I had five children. There was three and two. My observation is you could have five zip, but it's typically about 50-50. So I looked at that, and I didn't ask the guy. No, it wasn't quite my business, you know, to say, well, how many daughters have you got here, Tom? But just kind of mulling it over in my mind, I kind of concluded he probably had about 15 daughters. That would be 30 kids, five wives, about six children each, you know, round numbers. Now, this guy was pretty wealthy. He had a number of businesses, and I mean, they were pretty good-sized businesses. I mean, this guy's got, you know, millions of dollars coming in, going out. That's what polygamy is all about. But by the same token, he has a lot of freedom. And all of these people are dealing with freedom here. They're dealing with liberty. It's true, they're dealing with individual responsibility, but they're also dealing with freedoms. And that's what Americans tell me that they want. They want government out of their lives. They want freedom. They want opportunity. And what they've got is a socialist welfare state that's constantly sticking their nose into their business, and they can't quite figure out what's going on and why. So I thought, well, let me tell you. Let me just explain it to you. It all comes from insurance. It comes from limited liability. Now, let me tell you a little story here was going on up in the Idaho legislature. They proposed legislation to compel everybody to buy auto insurance. And so, as a lobbyist, I went in to testify before the Transportation Committee, and I was opposed to the compulsory insurance law that they were proposing in Idaho. And they came up with lobbyists from the National Insurance Institute from San Francisco, California, and there was two of them, and they came in and testified before the committee, and they brought in charts and graphs, and I mean they did a hell of a job. I mean they really came in there and they told us where the bear does it. Now, at the same time, we had a telephone tree, and we had a network of patriots all over Idaho, 44 counties in Idaho, and we brought in two witnesses from every county. That's 88 witnesses. Actually, I had 102 there that day. And we wanted to testify against this compulsory insurance bill. We were there to testify on numerous bills. We were opposed to seat belts. We were opposed to the drunk driving law. We were opposed to compulsory insurance. I mean, we were opposed to just about everything that these socialists wanted to put into play. And we postponed it. I mean, we stopped it dead in its tracks two or three times. But they keep coming back. And they keep coming back, and they keep coming back. They've got an agenda that pays them money. And we have an agenda, but it doesn't pay us any money. It costs us money. And people get tired after a while. They give up and quit. That's what ultimately happened up there in Idaho. But anyway, in this particular case, we came in, we testified, we said, hey, we don't want this law, and here's why we don't want it. And we're taxpayers, and we're voters, and one thing and another, and two or three times the committee said, well, that people don't want it, and so we're gonna vote it down, or we're not going to report it out of committee is what they do. And then this went on, and it went on for a while, and then one day the committee voted it out 7-2, the nine members on the committee, 7-2, they voted it out. Rusty Barlow, who was a representative from Pocatello. One day I caught him in the hall and I said, Rusty, I'm bummed out. I mean, I am just ticked off. The Transportation Committee voted that insurance law out of committee 7-2. They did the same thing with the seatbelt law. And I said, I'm really bummed out. He said, you know, George, you just don't understand. You just don't understand politics. How do you like that? Georgie, you don't understand politics. And I said, well, explain it to him. And he said, here's what happens. The governor wants a particular bill. The governor wants, let's say, a seatbelt law. He wants a compulsory insurance law. He wants this or that or something else. We, the Republicans, we want an education bill. We want this or that other legislation. And so our caucus meets, and we come to this conclusion. We will support these statutes, these laws that the governor wants, if the government will support the laws that we want. It's kind of give and take. And it doesn't have anything to do with what the people of the state want. And I thought that was very revelatory. Taught me a lesson. That what happens here, and you saw it with the Barack Obama health care bill. The people of America, when they were polled, 62% of them said, no, we don't want this health care bill. And the president said, yes, you do. And so he went out there and he twisted arms and he got the votes that he needed. And some of them he bribed and some of them he threatened. You know, kind of like old J. Edgar Hoover, you know. You want to vote this way or that way, because if you don't, you know, you've got a file in here that could be made public, and that'd be embarrassing for everybody. And we want to keep that quiet now, don't we, Don? You know, we don't want anybody to know about your indiscretions over here with one of Flo's girls. So in that case, then they threaten them and one thing and another. They bribe them and they pay them like that senator up in Nebraska. Gave him $100 million worth of taxpayer money. Ben Nelson. Remember that, the Ben Nelson bribe? No. Now, that's the way politics works, you know, like it or lump it. Now, I'm not concerned about the Barack Obama bill because, you see, I'm exempted under religious free exercise on page 18. You're not, so you can sit down and shut up and pay for it. Now, I got to pay, too. I don't deny it. I'll be paying just like you do every time I go out and buy something. It'll cost me more money. And that's because the people that are being taxed aren't going to pay for it. They're going to raise their prices. We're going to pay for it with inflation and hidden tax. But my point is that that's the way the game is played, and it's called the limited liability game. Now, the people of America are being taxed by the insurance industry and the political process through the Obama health care plan, whether they like it or not. It's going to be a great thing for insurance. And that's because everybody has to buy the product. Can you imagine what a wonderful thing this would be for the auto industry if they could get a law passed like the insurance industry just did? Everybody has to buy a new car. Everybody has to buy a car. And then we could index it by income, you know, as to how valuable the car had to be. I mean, we could create a hell of a boom for the auto industry. And we could say, hey, this is in the name of the health, safety, and welfare of the public. If you don't have an automobile, you know, you could have a medical emergency and wouldn't have any way to get to the hospital. But now you've got a way to get to the hospital, and so that's the rational basis that we're going to use this for. We need it so that you can make sure you got transportation in case you need it or something on that order. Now, that's the way that game is played. So let's wake up and smell the coffee and let's understand how that's done. So this Boise County buckboard wreck story that we take on back in 1900 lays the foundation for limited liability. As it progresses through time, the Financial Responsibility Act of 1976 comes in, and now everybody's required to buy insurance. To begin with, everybody, you know, not everybody, but a lot of people, half the people want the insurance, and then pretty soon they take it a step further, like the camel putting his nose in the tent, and then they require you to buy this insurance. Now, one time I had a student come in here. His name was Harry Wolf. And I kid you not, Harry Wolf, that was his name. And Harry had a story. You see, I was talking about insurance and limited liability, and he believed in insurance. See, many of you people are sitting out there saying, this guy's nuts. Well, I don't doubt it. You're sitting out there from your perspective in life. I used to sit out there, and I thought people didn't have insurance were nuts, too, until I started doing the arithmetic. And then I got through with that, and I said, hey, wait a minute. I don't think this is everything it's cracked up to be. Well, anyway, that's what Harry felt. And he was in the classroom here, and he took me to task right in front of everybody, and he said, you know, my wife was killed by an uninsured driver. And he was a Mexican. And furthermore, he was a wetback. He wasn't even a documented. And Harry, he got emotional. Now, I'd forgotten the exact circumstances of the wreck, you know, this undocumented Mexican alien who didn't have a green card was driving this car down the street, and he ran into my wife and killed her. And he didn't have insurance. So I said, well, let me ask you this. Let's suppose that this guy that ran into your wife had a green card. Would your wife be alive today? And Harry thought about it for a minute, and he said, probably not. Well, let's suppose that this guy, instead of being a Mexican, let's suppose that he was a Canadian with a green card. Would your wife be any more alive or dead today if a Canadian killed her instead of a Mexican? He thought about it for a minute, and he said, well, probably not. So let me ask you this. Let's suppose that this Canadian that killed your wife had full coverage insurance, $1 million worth. Would your wife be any more alive or dead today if he had insurance? And he conceded again, well, she'd probably be just as dead. but I would have been paid for the damage that he caused. So what this story really boils down to is, it isn't that it's going to bring his wife back, and it isn't that he's concerned that his wife is dead. It's concerned that his dead wife didn't provide any payment. I feel bad because I lost my wife and I didn't get any compensation. I would have felt better if I'd have been paid $100,000 to $300,000. Well, I'm sure that he would have. But now, let's suppose that we were practicing strict liability under the Mosaic Law, pursuant to the Ten Commandment program, instead of the Limited Liability program. Here's the way this case would have come down if we had been practicing strict liability. Number one, the man didn't hit his wife, kill her, and then run off, and we didn't find him. We had him right there. He was captured. He was arrested and jailed. Prosecuted. Under the strict liability rule, we would have bored a hole through his ear and we would have sold him to Harry. He would have been a bondservant. Second, Harry now has the power of life and death, because if you cause a damage and you kill somebody, the law requires an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, wound for wound, stripe for stripe, and life for life. So Harry could say to the man, good, now we're going to take you out and stone you to death. And then we're going to put you and your gravestone right next to my wife and her gravestone, and when I come out to visit, I can see both of you. Isn't going to bring his wife back, but it's going to send a signal to the community. It says, okay, you can drive, but you got to buy everybody that you kill. See how simple that is? You have to be 100% responsible. Now, one of two things is going to happen. I don't know if Harry told me this guy was drunk or not, but a lot of times people will complain to me and they'll say, hey, this guy was drunk. And I say, well, what if the guy was sober? Yeah, but he was drunk. Excuse me. In America today, there are approximately 40 to 50,000 people a year that are killed. But only 10,000 of them are killed by drunk drivers. The other 30 or 40,000 are killed by sober drivers. If you want to prevent more deaths, here's what you do. You take all the sober drivers off the road, cancel their driver's licenses, and take their cars away from them, because they kill three times more, four times more people than drunk drivers. Boys and girls, you know, things happen. And I'm not here to tell you that, you know, people should be driving drunk. I'm just here to tell you that the logic that's being used here is emotional logic. It's not designed to solve the problem. The way we solve the problem is to make everybody responsible. And limited liability does just that. It limits the liability. These people are not responsible. Now, this guy could come to Harry and say, look, I don't want you to kill me. I will ransom my life. Remember, Harry said he'd feel better if he got paid. All right, so how much is a Mexican worth? I don't know how old this guy was, but let's suppose he was 30 years old. He's a Mexican. Harry owns him. And he owns him until he pays off whatever the debt is that Harry lays upon him. So Harry could say, well, I want you to pay me $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. The guy doesn't have insurance, and he doesn't have the $100,000, $200,000, or $300,000, but he can work it off. Now, I'm sure you're going to say to me, but wait a minute, that doesn't satisfy the debt. The hell, it doesn't. If the guy is working for $5 an hour, 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week. Not that we would limit that to 40 hours a week, but even if we did, 40 hours times 5 equals $200 a week, times 52 weeks is $10,400 a year, times 49 years is $509,600, and you can keep him until the Jubilee. That's $500,000 worth of work out of the guy at $5 an hour. That's minimum wage. Common labor, for crying out loud. No, the guy under the bondservant statute was worth $500,000 to Harry. But, you know, we wanted a kinder, gentler program, so we enacted the 13th Amendment and we abolished slavery and bond servitude so that we could have limited liability and insurance. And the people don't buy the insurance, and you can't make them, and they don't stay in their own countries. They keep coming across the border, and, you know, people break the law. People do things. Now, there should be consequences. The Mexicans coming across the border don't face any consequences, so why shouldn't they keep coming? You know, a law without a penalty isn't a law. It's a suggestion. We don't have any law against illegal immigration in this country. We have a suggestion that says you should stay in your own country. But if you come over here, you'll probably make 10 times more than you will in your own country. Now, you can figure out the results, can't you? Now, in the case of Harry Wolfe over here, he would have been miles ahead with the bondservant statute under the Ten Commandment model, under the limited liability model that he subscribes to and participates in. He got paid zero. And that's because 54% of the people in the country don't buy the insurance. They drive without it. They've got driver's licenses and drive without it. Those that don't have driver's licenses drive without insurance and without the license. That doesn't stop anybody. And even if the guy had had a license and insurance and registration and proof of insurance and an inspection sticker and all the rest, Harry's wife's going to be just as dead. And if the damage was over $100,000, Harry would have to sue to collect. And on average, he would collect $11,000. Is $11,000 for his dead wife from an insured driver adequate compensation for the death? I don't think so. And that's because Harry doesn't get to set the amount of the damages. It's the government that sets it, and the government's in bed with the insurance industry. Now, what kind of justice do you think you're going to get there? So, again, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. When we take a look at limited liability, we take a look at insurance, and we ask some hard questions, we find that, hey, it limits our capacity. Creates a guardian-ward relationship in which we're the wards and they're the guardians. We have to pay. It takes money out of our pockets. When it comes time to collect, they don't pay. And we can't make them pay, and on average, you're only going to pay 11%. It's a profitable program for government. It's a profitable program for the insurance industry, but it's not profitable for us. We're the guys that have to pay, and then we can't collect when it's due. It does not accomplish the social good that they told us that it was going to do. And you're going to find that out with the Obama health care plan. You're going to find that all of the promises that they said they were going to give you aren't going to materialize. And the costs that they said you were going to have to pay are going to be four times as much. And when you get through with the program, your health program isn't going to be fixed. And it's going to be made worse. And if you don't think so, just name one program that the government's ever been involved in that succeeded. You know, like Social Security, or the Postal Service, or any other government program. I'm out of time. I've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Meanwhile, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio, log, schedule, and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.